Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South American. All the ships at sea. Let's go to press.
We'd like to thank you for the occasional moments of peace and love our families experience. Well, not today.
I think the media is among the most dishonest groups of people I've ever met. Yep,
sir. One of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides.
What Boehner is angry with is the American people holding him accountable.
If I become president, oh, do they have problems. They're going to have such problems.
Well, I don't know why that's funny.
It's the Ricochet Podcast with Rob Long, he's back, and Peter Robinson. I'm James Lilex, and we just talk about what we're thankful for, including this podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the Ricochet Podcast, number 330. We're brought to you proudly by Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile offers nationwide talk and text and high-speed data at competitive prices, and they donate up to 5% of your monthly bill to the conservative organization of your choice. Call 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/ricochet. And we're brought to you by Casper as well. Casper Mattresses, of course, an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Visit casper.com/ricochet and use that coupon code ricochet at your checkout. Brought to you by Harry's Shave. You can get a great shave at a fair price with who? Harry's, of course. Go to harrys.com right now to get a limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last. And don't forget to enter that coupon code all together now, ricochet, for checkout at $5 off. And we're brought to you by Simply Safe. I was just on a vacation. It was nice to know that I didn't have to worry about my home. You can protect your home the smart way without the expense of long-term contracts by using SimpliSafe. So visit simplisafe.com/ricochet to get free shipping on your order and a free keychain remote. Point it. Use it. That's worth $25. Spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. Whew. Look at that. And all these people queuing up here to take advantage of the smart Ricochet audience. Wouldn't you like to be one of them? Of course you would. Here's Rob to tell you why you should and you must.
Well, I'll tell you why you are. If you're listening to this podcast, you are a Ricochet listener, and we thank you. But we would like you to become a member of Ricochet, and here's why. Because all of this costs money, and we have good sponsors, and they have great products. Patriot Mobile is sort of new to us, and they're doing a fantastic thing that I hope you all check out. But also because we have a site, ricochet.com. It's a civil conversation between and among contributors and members on the center right. Now more than ever, it's important that we understand each other and try to understand each other. And if we disagree with each other, to disagree civilly. And that is what Ricochet means. Ricochet is the free market solution to what all liberals like to say. We need more regulation. We disagree. We don't think you need to regulate the internet. We think you need to privatize it. Become a member with us. We invite you. We'd love to have you join us. It's important, not just because it's a great and noble experiment that we're doing, but also because we got to make payroll. And nothing's free. So if you're a center-right, free market, conservative, social conservative, libertarian, you all – the one part of that Venn diagram ideologically that intersects is no such thing as a free lunch. And we really, 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 really – I don't want to sound dire or alarmed or alarmist, but we need your help and we need it now. Thank you.
There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. If you're going to be correct.
Tanstoffel, right?
Tanstoffel, yes. Which is one of the ugliest looking acronyms, but I think you know what it means and you agree. Peter, you're also there. Well, and welcome. We missed you on the cruise last week. I missed both of you on the cruise last week.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I didn't. I could dominate the conversation, so I didn't miss. But now that we're back in this strange world, I mean, I'm literally having the complete cognitive dissonance here because yesterday, Fort Lauderdale, sand, palm, sun. No. Today I'm in Minneapolis. There's snow, an inch of it, on the branches. It's very,
really?
Very picturesque for Thanksgiving. But to show you how strange this year has been, there's something I thought occurred to me this morning. Tell me if you think I'm nuts. The reason that President Obama does not want Keith Ellison to run the DNC is because Keith Ellison is a Muslim.
No, I think that's probably true. I think that's you've identified the weirdness of this whole season, which is, and also the flaw in the sort of liberal, I don't know, philosophy, which is that we don't want to categorize people. We want to celebrate diversity, but we only want to celebrate it in the categories that we like. And we do believe in racial and ethnic representation, and you know in I guess what I'd say, what is it, group animus. So yeah, he thinks it's probably a liability, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. That would confirm the fears of those people out there in the middle that they're sort of head scratchingly trying to figure out and thinking they might want to win back at some point to win. Peter, what do you say? What have you been up to these last 2 weeks, and how are you feeling about the post-election situation?
Oh, I am, I've been missing my friend Rob Long. I've been particularly missing him on the Ricochet podcast.
Me too.
Because I have yet to hear him. Well,
say it.
Rob, I was right and you were wrong. And that is so seldom true that I just have to say it.
I will only amend that statement this way, Peter. That you were
No, don't amend it. Just fall to your knees and grovel. No, just for a moment.
Wait, let me finish. You were extremely right. And I was monstrously, catastrophically, utterly and totally wrong. I would just push your statement to the extremes. You were really right.
James, let him run. Don't get
no, I just want the terms to be clarified. I know what we're right and wrong about. Were we right about Peter's prediction about the election, or was Rob Long wrong about his verdict on the man? That's what I'm trying to figure out here. What are we right and wrong?
I'm just talking about the predictions, to tell you the truth. The verdict on the man still – that is yet to come. Well, Rob did say during Glop podcast – I know it was during Glop because I think I would have gotten right in your face if you'd said it on a Ricochet podcast. You did call Trump and his organization idiots once and morons once. And I think we can say whatever their flaws, they're not unintelligent.
I think whatever their flaws, they are not – They reinvented political campaigning.
Did they ever?
In the United States forever. That yes. Political campaigning in general anyway, who knows about the locals, but in the general, a political campaign has been pretty much the same since 1964, right? Maybe 1960 you could say, but 1964 seemed to usher in true modernity or contemporary sort of media and the idea of a national media plan and all that stuff. That everything from 64 on was sort of an amplification of 64.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys who ran the Reagan campaign, which is sort of the first sort of magnificent media campaign, they all trained in the 60s. And the guys who ran 88.
That's true. That's
Carvel
true.
And Begala in 92 and all the people, and even Axelrod, they had their roots. They were trained by people who came of age in the early 60s in a kind of a national media campaign. This is a absolute sea change. This is a complete generational shift. And they were right. And I was wrong. And now I could be like really petty here and say, well, they didn't even know they were right. They thought they were going to lose too. But no, the outcome is the outcome. So humble pie has been eaten for two straight weeks.
Right.
However, it's not like I've changed my opinion on the guy. Although today's news and his cabinet picks, except for one, which I find loathsome, show – either he's going to Forrest Gump his way through this administration.
Tell me what you mean by that. I want to be able to follow.
He's going to stumble around and make the right decisions on some basis of intuition and luck. Or he's thought about it and analyzed the problems and is making some very, 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 very shrewd moves.
Right.
What's the loathsome pick?
Steve Bannon.
Oh, right.
Completely unnecessary.
Rob, could I ask how I've met Steve Bannon a couple of times over the years, but done nothing more than meet him. And frankly, I don't think I've met him since he came out. He produced a movie on Reagan on a shoestring. And it was at that moment when Hollywood was still poo-pooing Reagan. Well, Hollywood still does. It was, I thought, quite a noble thing to do. The production values were so-so, but he had very little money to spend. And I met him. There were a couple of showings of that at which we met and chatted. That's my total exposure to Steve Bannon. Why do you find him loathsome? He's now a public figure. You're on the record saying this. What's the background? I just don't know.
Well, I think
we've never had a chance to talk it over.
The alt-right stuff, I think, is – well, first of all, a little bit's personal, that I knew Andrew Breitbart pretty well. And Andrew Breitbart was the last thing from alt-right, the last thing from a white nationalist, the last thing from a national identity thinker. He was a big, chaotic American mosaic conservative in a way that I found really inspiring and also kind of infuriating. But you know, basically an inspiring person who had a gigantic heart, just yes. A gigantic heart. And it's hard for me to divorce my friendship with him and my loyalty to his memory with what has happened to his namesake site. And I blame leadership. And I also find this white nationalism and all the Heil Trump nonsense to be just, unnecessarily ugly and unnecessarily pathetic. I mean, the little tiny little cretins in that video that everyone has seen from the Atlantic magazine uttering their little excuses, they just sound to me like the worst of the black nationalists, the worst of the identity politics on the ethnic minorities. There's a wonderful moment in that – now I'm digressing – in that Atlantic video, which I think everyone should see, where – The guy giving the speech, whatever his name is talking about, oh, it's our legacy, it's our birthright. He's doing all of this sort of crazy Aryan nation nonsense about how we're sort of this is our inheritance and this, all this noble language. And in the foreground stands up an obese man in a big orange shirt. And I just thought there is something perfect about that, that he is describing the sort of white knights of the American continent. And yet in the audience is somebody who probably could not walk 100 yards without grabbing the side of the wall and maybe having to go to – you know, it's probably a type 2 guy on his way to being on Social Security disability insurance. So all this idea that this sort of white nation is going to rise up, it's just – to me, it just makes me sick. And I believe it's all located in that part of the small part, compartmentalized part of the administration, which I hate. But that, I know I'm going on and on. I have to know, but I do have to admire.
You're allowed to go on and on. We miss you. We've missed these rants. The only thing I would say is we have to be really careful about associating. We have to be careful now that Steve Bannon is a public figure. He's a senior member of the administration. And I grant, because the bit I can follow is I knew Andrew a little bit through you. And when you say you know Andrew, you knew Andrew pretty well. You and Andrew just loved each other. You were very, very close. And what has happened to Breitbart is nothing. Even I can see this, not having known him nearly as well as you did. What's happened to Breitbart is nothing that Andrew would have approved of at all. And Steve Bannon has to take a large measure of responsibility for that.
I agree.
But yeah. I'm not aware that Steve Bannon has anything to do with those nutcases in that video.
No. But I here's my argument. My argument is that now that he is a public figure, he has to be careful about his associations.
Oh, he needs to
clarify his beliefs.
Denounce that stupidity.
Not me. It's not the public.
I'll tell you what he's thinking. That if I start denouncing these guys now, every time there's a group of 40 idiots.
That's true.
Beard picking guys who sit around and see Heil and say 88 and wink at each other. Every time those guys say something in support of Trump, I got to come out and condemn them. And they'll never stop having to do that. So they just don't want to play that game. I mean, I was watching CNN, which I rarely do. I'm watching it in the hotel room as I'm getting packed, ready to go. And the whole morning was about the alt-right, the right wing, the Nazis, Spencer, the rest of it. It was a fulmination and a full on panic. Over 200 losers getting together.
And
the administration, I think, of course, why are they – you can say they always call them Hitler. They always say they're Hitler. Romney was Hitler. Bush was Hitler, and that's true. But there was a couple of moments, a wink, wink, nudge, nudge moments during the campaign. They brought it on themselves. I don't know about the KKK. Yeah, you know, the little winking and the accommodation of the alt-right because it was convenient. I don't think Donald Trump is a bigot and a racist. I think that he was able to use words and postures in order to appeal to people and bring them on board, get everybody on board. I don't think that's him, but his toleration of them and his use of them is partly The Measure of the Man.
I think that's fair.
That said, at this point, I think he's made a couple of statements saying, get out of here, you knuckleheads, and that's it. Move on. Because 200 of these losers, as somebody tweeted the other day, there were 200 of these people in a room sea-hiling, and it's the biggest story of the day. There's going to be 200,000 people in the mall protesting an abortion. And I don't think CNN is going to concern themselves. Right.
Very good point. Here's what I would say. I would just say, because I think that is a much more sophisticated way of looking at it than the way I'm looking at it. I totally agree with you. I would only say this, that I have developed a taste over the past 2 weeks for humble pie. I like it. And I have a very dim, pessimistic view of what this administration can accomplish. And I lay it at the feet of its sordid, dirty connections it seems to have in the White House. And I am now looking at a cabinet that is pretty impressive. I am looking at a 2 year window where we can actually make deep change in the culture of the DOJ, in the culture of the Supreme Court, of the culture of the bureaucracy that is like really hard to do, right? You need unity. You need a unified government across all parties, a uniparty essentially. And you got 24 months to do it. And I'm looking at in 2 years eating a feast of humble pie, and I like it. I'm perfectly willing to say, boy, was I wrong and stupid.
Peter, if there's one agency they had to attack, which one would you choose?
Oh, every single one of them, to tell you the truth.
How about the FCC?
It's
not in anybody's radar, is it? But the FCC is one of those things right. That controls so much of our speech and so much of our dialogue.
Yeah,
but
Wait, stop. Yeah. Excuse me. I'm actually going to come in and support. Was that a segue?
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Nuts.
I was helping, James. I helped.
He was. He was a segue helper from Rob Long.
I was actually engaging in genuine conversation. What would you like me to do? Shut up and put a pin in it.
It's really rude when you interrupt our segues, Peter.
Shall I state my thought or hold it?
Hold it, because I'm going to get back to it in just a second.
Thank you.
And when I talked about the FCC having control of our conversation, well, of course, you control your conversation, but you can also control where your money goes when you're having those conversations, because it's possible your monthly cell bill might be funding programs you don't like. That's right. You pay money once a month, and who knows what the political action arm of the company that you use for your cell phone, who knows where the money goes? Maybe it goes to expand the size of government or expand the nanny state. Well, Patriot Mobile is helping you take a stand. Patriot Mobile is the nation's only conservative cell phone company. Whoever thought there was such a thing? Well, there isn't. And Patriot offers exceptional coverage and service and comparable or even lower prices than other cell phone carriers. Best part, 5% of your monthly bill goes to the conservative organization of your choice, not some menu they picked for you. There's no catch. There's just outstanding coverage, service, and the latest, greatest devices. So put your money where your values are and expand at the civil discourse by switching to Patriot Mobile today. They'll even buy out your current contract for up to $350 or offer a free iPhone 6. That's what I got. Love it. With a $60 talk text data plan, or a free Galaxy S7 with a $70 talk text data plan. So call 1-800-A-PATRIOT today or visit patriotmobile.com/ricochet. That's 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/ricochet. And Peter, your point about the government agencies.
No, it wasn't a point about the government agencies. That's why I was trying to get out from under that before we moved on to government agencies. I want to give Rob this much. 2 points. One is a story told to me by a friend just last night. Here in Northern California, he was stopping at Pete's, which is a kind of – he makes 27 different kinds of coffee. It's one of those places. And in the parking lot, he happened to walk past – somebody was just pulling in. He had a big, sleek black Mercedes-Benz, and on the bumper was a sticker that said Hillary for prison. And my buddy thought, oh, what a gag. And he just said, like your bumper sticker. A moment later, my friend was seated in Pete's having his cup of coffee, and this fellow walked in and sat down with him. And they started chatting, and my friend and this man, aside from me, are the only two other conservatives in Northern California, my friend thought, so they got along beautifully. And then the other fellow looked at him for a moment and said, you're not Jewish, are you? And my friend told me this story, and I thought, oh, no. All that I've been in my mind listening to Glop podcasts and listening to Jonah and John talk about all the anti-Semitic garbage they're getting in their Twitter feed, and in my mind I've been saying, it's just Twitter. Come on, just Stop reading it. Yeah. It's. But then if this impedes, oh no. So that
impedes in Palo Alto.
Impedes in Palo Alto, California. So something, there is an ugliness that feels freed at this point. Well, we all want greater freedom of speech. We all want freedom of speech. But Trump and Steve Bannon, they need to be aware of this and they need to shut it down. Point one. Yeah, point two.
And when also, it comes to, yeah, okay, sorry.
Go ahead. When it comes to Donald Trump, go ahead. No, go ahead. I'm changing.
No, I'm just saying, like,
where did it go after that? When the guy said, "Are you Jewish?" What did he say? And where did the conversation go?
My friend said, "I'm half German and half Scottish." And then he got up and suddenly very nervous about who this guy was and where everything might go. He said, "Excuse me," and got up and left. That's where it went after that. But it was just a staggering thing, just inconceivable to my mind, inconceivable before Election Day.
And I feel like, I said this already on the radio, he could be bigger, you know? He could just be a big – he's got an opportunity to be a really big person now. First of all, because everybody has such low expectations, but he really could be big. And big in character. And I hope he is, and I hope he does. And I'm pessimistic, but again, as I say, I have developed a taste for humble pie. I would love to eat some humble pie.
They have I agree with you, Rob. The appointments so far have ranged from very good to magnificent, in my opinion. Well, James Mattis hasn't been appointed Secretary of Defense, but if he is, I'd put him in the magnificent category. That Mitt Romney is being considered for Secretary of State. Just astonishing. My big concern at the moment, and here I have to take a moment to set this up, I served under both Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, and under Ronald Reagan – the administration operated efficiently in large part because people knew where the president stood. There were all kinds of questions that didn't have to go into the Oval Office because Ronald Reagan had made clear where he stood. George H.W. Bush, one reason that administration got sort of gummed up, so to speak, you could never tell on any given policy where the president, what he would decide. Trump is now moving. Good Lord. To read the tweets that were taking place by reporters, that were being made by reporters during the New York Times interview with him, Trump was changing his mind in the course of an hour-long interview. So the good news is, as best I can tell, he surrounded himself with really good people on the economic program. They have a huge opportunity to move, and it looks as though they are ready to do so. The bad news is people will take two steps forward and then say, wait a minute, is the president still behind this? And that'll happen again and again and again.
I agree. Can I just add a little shading to that? I
mean, of course.
First of all, about the George H.W. Bush thing, I think the problem also there was that it's a very Trumpian issue because George W. Bush had one policy, no new taxes. That was it. That's what he said. That's how he ran in 88, and that's how he won. No new taxes, read my lips. And because – nobody in the administration, certainly not as chief of staff, certainly not as secretary of treasury, believed that. They found it very easy to go to him, who also didn't really believe it, and get a tax hike. Whether it was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, I think it was the wrong thing to do, but just assume for a minute that it was the right thing to do. It doesn't really matter. If your policy is no new taxes and then you raise taxes, you have no policy. You don't stand for anything. And the people who convinced him to do that, I think he probably convinced himself to do that, knew that they could persuade that president to shoot himself in the foot. The second thing I would say is the other way to look at the Trump appointments are as an extremely shrewd, almost President Johnsonian level of Machiavellian brilliance, which is to take your enemies and put them in your cabinet.
Exactly.
Mitt Romney is a highly respected, extremely dignified, and very articulate Trump critic. Now he is been neutralized and actually will probably do a very good job. He's be very good at that. Mattis, I think, took no side. Nikki Haley came out today. Nikki Haley is I don't know if she's been officially appointed, but she's on the short list to be at the UN ambassador. Now Nikki Haley would be somebody who in 4 years would be a very, very strong pick if the Trump administration goes, pear-shaped to run against him, to be a challenger. These are smart ideas to bring the people in, and now they're part of the team. So now they got to be on your side. The third thing I would say is I just had a dinner last night with a friend of mine who's very, 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 very connected in New York financial circles. And we were talking about these cabinet picks. And he mentioned a guy, a very good friend of his, so I won't say the name, who is very, very close to being will probably be offered or certainly will be on the very, very short list for Secretary of Treasury. And there's a certain quality to those guys. They believe the fact that the president-elect doesn't have a particularly strong set of policy guidelines. That is attractive to them. So if you're Mitt Romney and you're in the meeting and you're talking about the foreign policy, it's attractive to you that basically what he's saying is – Trump is saying to you is like – or whether he's saying it or not, you're hearing, oh, I get to be president of foreign policy. This guy will just do whatever I want him to do. He's going to support me in my foreign policy strategy. And if you're the Secretary of Treasury, you think to yourself, well – and these guys are all powerful, egotistical, ego-driven men mostly – who are, you know, they like the idea that they're going to go in with what they see Trump, you know, he's lightweight, he's popular, but he doesn't really have anything strong. He can't really debate with you on policy. So he's Secretary of Treasury. I may disagree with him on all sorts of things. I may disagree with him on trade and all that. I'm going to be president of the economy. And I think that is either going to be a brilliant masterstroke of management on Trump's part or the seeds of the disaster of this administration. What do you think?
That's beautifully set up, just beautifully set up. And the answer is who knows?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So notice I'm not predicting anything. I'm just saying, hey, here's the possibilities. I've learned my lesson.
I mean, for goodness sake, here, look at the – you and I are saying, isn't it wonderful that Mitt Romney is being considered for Secretary of State? How shrewd at the one hand, how magnanimous on the other hand. And yet in the back of your mind, if you're Mitt Romney, you're saying – gee, lovely job, happy to have it, and maybe Mitt Romney will accept it. But I know for sure Mitt Romney will know more than you and I do, but I know for sure because it's been in the news, leaks here, there, and everywhere, Rudy Giuliani wanted that job. And whereas Mitt Romney was out attacking Donald Trump in the most robust, vivid, even almost crass terms, calling him a con man, Rudy Giuliani was as loyal to Donald Trump as he could be. And now Donald Trump is tossing Rudy over the side and putting me in place. Okay, Mitt Romney may take that job, but the idea that Donald keeps people in place out of loyalty or why does he keep people? You just don't quite know the mind of Donald Trump.
Maybe you don't know it, but I think that is smart. I think it is smart when you're president and it's a 51% nation and you know you're going to have to like knit everybody together. It's smart. It may not be nice, but it's smart to take your loyalists and kind of toss them aside. This is Prince Hal time, you know. You don't want to have you don't need to Falstaff and his merry band around you anymore. You've got more important work to do. And Rudy Giuliani's not a threat. He's not going to go anywhere. He's not going to be any trouble. I would swap him in a heartbeat for Steve Bannon, or you know, AG maybe. But I'm not sure I would. I'm not sure that I would. I would be. I'm not sure that even had I won, I'm not sure that the loyalists are who you want at this point. I mean, that by the way, that's Barack Obama's great failure. That's his great failure was that he did not. The minute he came in, he became president of the Nancy Pelosi and the House and the Harry Reid Senate, mm-hmm. instead of becoming president of the whole thing and pushing them away arm's length. Had he done that in the first 2 months, mm-hmm. I think we'd be talking about a different kind of presidency.
That could very well be. I'm thinking now that the great presidents, the successful presidents, Roosevelt, Kennedy, Reagan, all had a way of mixing loyalists with very competent outsiders. And frankly, Johnson as well.
Yeah.
Johnson was not a successful president, but he was an extremely shrewd politician. And frankly, all of those figures, Roosevelt through to Reagan, were perfectly happy to let the loyalists and the competent outsiders fight each other. Just let it happen. When I was in the Reagan White House, it was intensely frustrating for us speechwriters. Why does the president let these these technocrats mess with our beautiful texts. All we're trying to do is give him speeches that enunciate the and of course the president was letting it happen because the technocrats had their points. You got to appeal anyway. So maybe he's that good. We'll see. Maybe Trump is that good.
You know, you have some shading on General Mattis, I know, which we would love to hear. But maybe we want to do something else first. See, as a new leaf, James.
Wow, elegant. I'm still thinking back to the time where he's got to throw out, where Prince Hal has to throw away Falstaff. And who comes to mind when you think of a large, jolly fellow? Of course, Chris Christie comes to mind, but I can't see him in that role.
Oh, very nice, actually.
As a matter of fact, I see Chris Christie as sort of the guy, the not too smart guy who's holding a spear in the high school production of Robin Hood. He's Little John. He just stands back there and he doesn't have many lines. He just has great presence. Because when you look back at Little John versus Falstaff, Little John, for some reason, seemed a bit more clean-shaven than Falstaff. Falstaff's got the full beard and the mustache, and Little John. No, his chin. If you were Chris Christie and you had to shave around those chins and that jowls, what would you do? You'd fear every day of a nick, but you wouldn't because you'd be using Harry's because you're smart. Now, Harry's, as you know, Harry's Shave was started by a couple of guys, best friends, in fact, Jeff and Andy, and they were fed up like every man with being overcharged with razors. So they started, you know, the man tax on razors. So they started their own razor company to give people what they deserve, a great shave at a fair price. Now, this holiday, since we're coming into that season, snow outside my window to prove it, Harry's is offering a limited edition shaving set, Midnight Blue Chrome Razor Handle. Get this, you can get it engraved with initials. Three of Harry's German-engineered five-blade cartridges that provide a close, comfortable shave. You can get a foaming gel that smells amazing. It's great. And a beautifully designed gift box, too. It goes for $30 at harrys.com. And they offer handles and sets starting at just $10 if you haven't tried Harry's for yourself. So as a special offer for fans of this show, we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off your order when you enter the coupon code RICOCHET at your checkout. But free shipping ends December 9th. We're already in that phase where you got to worry about such things. So act now. Go to harrys.com right now to get a limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last. And don't forget to enter coupon code RICOCHET at the checkout for $5 off. That's harrys.com, coupon code RICOCHET. Then there was something else back there also that I forgot, and I'm trying to think what it was. But while I will gather and figure it out, you were talking about General Mattis, which we've been told, mad, crazy man, the second coming of Curtis LeMay, as though having somebody a little bit unpredictable in that department isn't good or isn't useful when projecting strength. What are your stories, Peter? What's your evaluation of the man?
Jim Mattis and I have become pretty good friends since he's been out here at the Hoover Institution, which is almost 3 years now. And I have to say, I was a little intimidated before meeting him because, of course, he's Mad Dog Mattis. I thought this was Patton, or at least George C. Scott playing Patton. Jim Mattis is the sweetest, most self-deprecating, warmest man you would ever hope to meet. Just he's so counter his image. One of the first stories he told me was that, well, one of the reasons he went into the Marine Corps was that he kept getting in trouble. He grew up in the farm country of Eastern Washington State, and he was a hellion, he said, and got thrown in jail a couple of times, and off he went to the Marine Corps. And he said, as a matter of fact, not too long ago, he was paying his mother, who deep in her 90s is still with us, he was paying a visit to his mother, and this was when he was a four-star general, and they were sitting quietly reading the newspapers, and his mother kept glancing over at him. And Jim Mattis finally said, "Mom, what are you thinking?" And his mother replied to the four-star United States Marine Corps general, "Oh, Jimmy, I'm just so happy you're not in the penitentiary." Now, that's not the kind of story that most generals, so far as I am aware, would be willing to tell on themselves. At the same time, he is this extremely tough, highly decorated, and over the years now, I have seen Marines and former Marines interact with him again and again, and they all just revere him. But to James's point, if he does become Secretary of Defense, because of his manner, I'm sure he'll do beautifully on Capitol Hill during testimony. I'm sure he'll have the instant respect of the entire Pentagon bureaucracy. And as to our enemies, it is probably no bad thing to have as Secretary of Defense a man who said, and I confirmed with Jim that he did actually say this at one point, to young Marines, Jim Mattis said, be polite and be professional, but have a plan to kill every person you meet. There you have Jim Mattis.
Mm-hmm. It's a very Marine thing to say.
He's Hoover Institution, you know, we're all academics. Everybody carries a book bag or briefcase, and Jim still carries his Marine Corps backpack to and from the office.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, there's something to be said for having a Marine in charge of this stuff, right? I mean, they are the least enamored of technological solutions. You know, you compare them to the Navy or even the Army, they have, you know, enormous amounts of technology. The Marines are always first. Certainly not the Air Force. The Air Force is, basically a high tech company at this point.
Right.
I mean, no criticism, but it is. There is something bracingly, when we put it this way, when we say boots on the ground, the feet in those boots are almost always Marines.
Right.
And it would be, I think, useful and probably bracing to have a reform minded insider in the DOD where they need it. But somebody who also knows what the price is, the actual price is for, military excursions abroad.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. As a Marine, he's got two fundamental outlooks. One is the Marine Corps, by far the smallest of the services. And so the general approach of a Marine Corps general to everybody else is going to be, why are you guys so big? Why do you think you need to spend so much money? And then, of course, the second, because they're the ones, precisely as you said, they're the ones who go in first. The Marine Corps attitude is, don't go in. Don't go in unless you have to. But if you go in, let's win fast.
Right, right.
All that fits with Trump, actually.
Yeah, I mean, true. I mean, I would say that since James asked it earlier, what's the department that needs – that you'd start with? It wouldn't be DOD, although I think it needs it. I would definitely be Department of Justice. I mean, I do believe there's a 24-month window with an incredibly aggressive attorney general to change the culture of the Department of Justice. There are the legacy of the Obama presidency has been that justice has enormous power to bring lawsuits, to drop lawsuits, to write to interpret legislation, to interpret regulations, and to have a clean sweep. You know, if you're going to drain the swamp, start there.
Right, but unless DOJ takes on Pizzagate, it's just proof that the fix is in.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you guys up on Pizzagate?
No, but I know you'll tell me.
This is a hashtag going around, which refers to a child sex scandal, supposedly, that involves all Podestas, Hillary Clinton, Anthony Weiner, just about everybody. Oh, President Obama, of course. And if you look back at all of the speeches that these people have made in their emails, you will find constant references to codes that are clearly, obviously having to do with the child sex ring. Why, as a matter of fact, you can find the president himself winkingly saying private secret terminologies for pedophilia in public statements. Couldn't be more obvious than that. Nice. It's insane. And it has to do with a restaurant in Washington called Comet Ping Pong Pizza. And I was it's like I go away on a cruise. I shut off the internet. I shut off Twitter. I'm happy. I come back. I turn on the internet. I turn on the Twitter, and I see Pizzagate. And I just instantly want to go call the travel agent and say, give me another one. Because I'm happier not knowing this stuff. If you delve into this, you find everything that we had in the 90s. You have the child sex ring scandal panics that we had about the daycare. And you have the underground secret democratic organizations devoted to perfidy and oppression. In other words, everything that was it didn't go away. It just simmered and festered for a while, and now it'll be back. And there's nothing anybody can say or do that'll keep this nonsense from going, except now they got the internet, and now they got Twitter. Well, I looked at the sign for this place, Comet Ping Pong Pizza, and was surprised because I recognize it. It's a sign from an old liquor store in my neighborhood in D.C. many, many years ago, which they sold to this guy. And no one's mentioned the fact yet that it has – star and crescent. It has Islamic symbols on it in four locations, and that the thing was run by a Jewish gentleman. So it's like they haven't even gotten to this stuff yet. They're just still dealing with the pedophilia. But eventually they're going to get to the Islamic symbolism and the Jewish perfidy. It's madness.
Does that mean no pepperoni?
Trust me, it's a fascinating story. The New York Times did it yesterday about how fake news and fake stories and fake websites pump this stuff up until you just got these people who are nuts, insane. So that's the thing. Do we need to denounce them? I think what I said the other, you know, just a half an hour ago about saying you can't do everything, I agree with that. But I also agree with Rob that he's got to be a big guy. He has to be larger than he has been. And how you square the two? Well, we'll see. We'll see how good his advice is. I have to go here. I just want to say that anybody who missed the cruise missed a great time. It was remarkably fun. It was cheerful. It was quite interesting. There were a lot of Never Trump guys there and women too, and we all got along.
Nobody James, have you got 2 minutes before you run? I'd just like to ask one question. Now that you're back home in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. which aside from your home is a very liberal place. And of course, you're a professional journalist. You know every journalist in that town. What difference has the election made? Can you give us a story about how people are thinking differently, if indeed they are? Does it feel different?
All I can say is what happened at work, where a number of people who know that I am on the other side of the political equation came up and wanted to talk about it and were abashed to say about themselves that they had completely missed a spirit abroad in the land, which obviously they devoured.
Those idiots.
I know.
Morons.
No, there was a very rueful sort of shoot got away from us. We are in a bubble. And that's not a good thing to learn about yourself. But
right.
I think it's interesting that a lot of people were going through this and trying to process exactly what had happened, because you can either stand outside of it and say everyone's nuts, the nation is lost, it's mine and gone off the rails, and feel alienated from your country. I mean, those of us on the right endured 8 years of an Obama administration in which we saw a whole bunch of things that were deeply, deeply indicative of a mindset we didn't agree. And they pop up every day. School cancels a party that was themed America because it's insulting to some people. A police department fined by DOJ because they did not hire or they did not interview for jobs people who weren't citizens. You look at things like that and say, that's why you get Trump. But we didn't. I never felt profoundly alienated from America as a nation. It had a different accent. It had a different patois. It had a different song to it than I would have liked. But it was still recognizably my America. And these people have the choice of either declaring themselves to be an exile in a principality surrounded by a sea of red, or they can try to integrate themselves and understand exactly how this happened. And I think the smart ones will take the latter, because it's just not fun to be alienated.
I agree.
There you go.
I know you got to go. Can I ask one question? I'm sorry. I just because I'm curious. You and I have not talked about this. I could not go on the cruise due to a sudden new job that I've taken on, which we can talk about later, which I'm having a lot of fun. But I probably – this is maybe indiscreet to say publicly, to ask publicly. I'm going to do it anyway, because we're all Ricochet listeners. We're all part of the community. Mm-hmm. And if you're not a member, you should really join. We have a membership drive. We're halfway there. Just letting you know, you could bring us home. But James, Victor Davis Hanson, lovely person, was a Trump supporter.
Right.
And we had him on the podcast, and he was thinking, what's going to happen on the cruise? It's going to be horrible. Jonah Goldberg. Mm-hmm. Outspoken anti-Trumper.
David French.
Kevin Williamson.
Kevin mm-hmm. Williamson.
Mm-hmm. John Podhoretz.
How was it? These are great people that I really do care a lot about. And I admire them all immensely. They're brilliant writers and thinkers, and they care about the country, and they care about mm-hmm. the things they care about. And they are all on our side. How was it? Was it okay? Was it tense? Were there
a couple of them had some tough tables, from what I understand. And by that, I mean every night you get to sit with somebody from NR. It's part of the great thing about the cruise. And Jonah and David French, I can't speak for them, but I seem to recall that they had some hard tables, which took them to task. And I think David in particular had somebody come up to him after a speech and just say, "You don't get it." He said, "What? You don't get it. You don't get it." They went around and around on what it is. But there was a lot of anger there. That was the first couple of days. I never saw any of that. My table's view went from never Trump to always Trump and in between. And we had conversations about this. And they were interesting civil conversations. And none of these people were raving lunatics. Well, one. So it was remarkably collegial. And Gino, that was my experience.
That's
and
good.
I didn't see Jonah, you know, throwing around anybody like the Hulk treating Loki. So
Jonah smash. Yeah. That's good. That means people were on the right road. Who knows?
I think so. We'll see how it goes down the road. Hey guys, I have to go, but before I go, you know what? Just let me say one thing, and that's this. Yeti, mark the tape. 3, 2, 1. It's the Ricochet Podcast with Rob Long. He's back. And Peter Robinson. I'm James Lilex, and we just talk about what we're thankful for, including this podcast. Okay, that's the intro. I had to do that. And now I have to go.
All right.
Bye, guys.
James, thank you.
Hey, we should cut that, but also we should play it because it's kind of cool here. Could I say, Peter, it's just you and me here. So if I could say one thing here. It is now kind of a cliche to say, you know, when X or Y or Z happens, hey, that's why you got Trump. That's why you got Trump. But there is something, and I was talking about this with friends of mine over the past week. If you have a culture in which you have driven out even moderate conservatives from newspapers, from magazines, from television news networks, except for one, from universities, from high school faculties, from the French departments, from scientific organizations, from the most anodyne, politically disinterested industry and intellectual groups ever, from the American Poetry Review. If you've driven out and shamed and in some way banished the center right, not even the far right, just the center right, then you can't complain that you are now facing a hard right, what you perceive to be a hard right backlash. There are no moderates left. There are no moderate conservatives left because the left controls every single institution I can think of, save one, has driven them away. I mean, all my liberal friends are looking around, where are the moderate? Where are the normal Republicans? Well, no, you shamed them and browbeat them and banished them and in some cases fired them and in other cases prosecuted them. And now you're looking to find the loyal opposition.
Couldn't agree more.
There's something really, really, really loathsome about that, but also I think incredibly fitting. So I am working at a new job with a team, and it's a fun show. It's called Kevin Can Wait. It's on CBS at 8 o'clock. And
CBS at 8 o'clock on what day of the week?
On Monday, sorry, Monday. And it's, you know, it was a little bit of a disarray organizationally, administratively. And so I sort of, you know, the turnaround fireman guy came in, parachuted in, tried to write the ship. There's not that much to write because there's a lot of great stuff there. It is not, I will say this, it is not a typical Hollywood writer's room. We're shooting in New York, on Long Island, because Kevin, you know, is a proud and very devoted family man. Very devoted Roman Catholic, and he didn't want to move his family to L.A. again. He didn't want to live in L.A. He didn't want to do that. He wanted to do it in New York, and he didn't really want to do it in New York City. He wanted to do it close to where he lives, which happens to be
– Am I right? Did I read someplace that you're shooting – the soundstage is actually an old Grumman factory?
It's, in fact, an old Grumman plant, yes.
I am virtually certain that you are shooting Rob Long in the Grumman plant in which my mother worked during the Second World War. My mother was a Rosie the Riveter helping to build airplanes for Grumman during the Second World War. That goes amazing. Absolutely nowhere. It's simply Small World Department.
No, that's amazing. Well, it just shows you, like, all right, that's the American economy now. We're not in wartime, but we do make a lot of TV.
Okay, because I love you and because I love showbiz, I want to know a little bit about this show. You come into the middle of it. What is it? How many writers are there? What's the budget?
It's about,
what's the
production?
Schedule.
The budget's really large. The production schedule is sort of crushing. We got 22 episodes to do, of which they – and I came in on episode 10. there's a, you know, once you start these things, the schedule is just, it does, it's relentless. You just have to, if you're not fully and totally organized on top of things, it swallows you up like a wave. It really does. You just never get your footing back.
22 shows means a show a week.
Which is kind of what happened with it.
You're doing a show
one
a week?
Show a week.
Right. And then, so does that mean you've got this week's script and next week's script is being written? So you have to pay attention to two scripts at one time. Is that your job?
In the ideal world, you have your episode on the stage, we say, which is in on the go. It's being produced, in which you see run-throughs every day. And you do rewrites every day. And you have next week's script, and you hope this week after that script, you have that already booked, and you have those scripts ready to go. You're not looking at them again. They're already prepared. And you're probably, at that point, doing rewrites for the future. So you're doing rewrites for the week after. Or 2 weeks after, or the next month. You want to be five ahead. The way the year works, you want to be at least five scripts ahead by the time you hit the holidays, because the holidays, they eat up weeks that you're not working. So like Thanksgiving week, you don't really do anything. And the week of Christmas and New Year's, you don't really do anything. And you're not really working. So you have to be ahead, because it's a you're about two steps ahead of the sheriff by the end of the season, even if you're well organized. So – you know, it's like also new shows are hard, new series are hard. You're launching all that's hard, and so I'm kind of coming in. I'm frankly just between you and me and all the Ricochet listeners. Unfortunately, I'm revealing this. Like, I'm going to get a lot of credit for fixing something that was really kind of on its way to being fixed. The best kind of work, you know, not hard work, right? And I get to work with one of the funniest people in the world.
So could I ask, how does that work when you're developing a script? Where does Kevin James come in? He's the star. So do you pitch him and say, you have the couple writers come in and they give him a 5-minute pitch. Here's the situation. And he says, fine, I love it. Go write it. And he then the next time he hears about it is when he's recording it, when he gets the actual script. Or does the script get written and then it goes to him and he says, I don't like page 3. You need more.
It depends on the show, right? Each show is different. And this show, he created it, and he's an executive producer of it, and he's a writer too. I mean, he wrote he was in a big hit show called King of Queens for years, and you know, he's a stand up. He writes a lot of his own. He writes his own material, and so he's a writer too. It's just that he's also a writer who has to be on stage most of the week and perform. So I've never worked with a guy before. He's really, really a lovely person, but he knows exactly what's funny, right? He knows what works. There's a reason why when he told the network and the studio, I'll do another TV show, but it's got to be 20 minutes from my house on Long Island. They said yes. They said yes, because if you're going to put your money and invest your money somewhere, you want to do that with Kevin James. So, you know, he and I will sit so far. I've only been there 2.5 weeks, but, we're a little bit behind. So on a Saturday afternoon, we'd sit around, smoke a couple cigars and say, what's funny? What's interesting? What are the characters? What could we do? How can we help the audience find and become devoted to this show? And we come up with a bunch of ideas, and then the writers come, and then we come back. And so usually if I'm doing something else, the writing room will come up with, a way to do the story, and they'll pitch it to me, and I'll think, oh, that's pretty interesting. Let's go talk to Kevin, and we'll try to grab Kevin in between the 90,000 things he's got to do every day. And he'll say, well, how about this? How about this? How about that? Or this could be funny. Or, you know what, in this scene, what if my attitude was X or Y? And then, then you're watching the guy create comedy right in front of you. It's pretty inspiring. Pretty inspiring.
And how does your life work? Are you living out on Long Island?
So I'm a little bit like the reverse Dick Van Dyke, because I live in a little place in Manhattan, and I get on the Long Island Railroad, and I take the Long Island Railroad to work, and then I take it back to the reverse commute, but it's kind of wild.
Wow. 1950s in reverse.
Yep.
And so here you are. You've already made it very clear Kevin James is not typical Hollywood. No. Apart from anything else, he refuses to shoot in Hollywood. He wants his family where his family is.
He wants to raise his family where he was raised. It's like he's a local kid. He's a local guy. He's really loyal to the local community. He loves the fact that, we're employing a lot of people in the region, and that we're sort of building a business on Long Island that did not exist. We're repursing, old industry.
Factory.
Yeah, right. So it's like I think this is really hits living in the sweet spot.
But it's still show business. What were the conversations the day after the election?
Well, look, I mean, They were surprisingly enthusiastic. And I say surprisingly, not so much surprisingly to me, because I sort of knew some of the personalities involved. But I think that if certainly any Ricochet podcast listeners or even people who feel a certain way about Hollywood were in that room, they or in the rooms we were in, would be pleasantly surprised.
I'm happy to hear it.
Yeah.
Rob, do you ever get tired? Do you ever find yourself wishing you had a lovely place to lie down and just catch a moment's rest?
So I get off the train, and there are some nights where I fall right into bed, and I have a great night's sleep. And do you know why I have a great night's sleep, Peter?
Tell me, Rob.
Because of my mattress. I have a Casper mattress. And as you know, the mattress industry has forced consumers to pay notoriously high markups for an inferior product. But Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing the savings directly to the consumer. And it's an excellent mattress. Time magazine has named it one of the best inventions of 2015. And it will not disappoint you. It is obsessively engineered. Casper engineers have done an amazing job. It's a shockingly fair price. You know, look, mattresses are like they cost over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost $500 for a twin, $6 for a twin XL, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, and only $950 for a king. It's a great mattress. An in-house team of engineers spent thousands of hours developing the Casper, combined springy latex, supportive memory foam to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. I am here to tell you I sleep great on a Casper mattress, and buying one is completely risk-free. They offer free delivery, free returns with a 100-night home trial. So if you don't love it, they pick it up and they refund you everything, because Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it, or if you're my ambition is to spend half of my life on it. And best of all, Casper mattresses are made in America. They are making America great even as we speak. Special offers are for podcast listeners. And even if you're not a Ricochet member, you can take advantage of the special offer. But you know what? You'll sleep better if you're a member. I'm interrupting the Casper spot to talk about Ricochet. You can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/ricochet and using Ricochet as the code. That's Casper, CASPER.com/ricochet. Use Ricochet as your buying code, promotional code. Please do that. You will love it. I love my Casper mattress. I also love Ricochet. We are halfway to our membership goal. You can do two things at once. You can get a great cell phone service. You can get a great shave. You can have a great night's sleep. And you can feel good about supporting Ricochet. How about that?
Deal.
Yeah. See, I put it all in one. I'm James is more professional, but I'm just, I'm an amateur here. We were talking before we started about my new work, which of course I'm thrilled to be able to tell everybody Mondays at 8 p.m. on CBS. We were talking about the decimation of the what I would call the center right in all American institutions. And do you think that Trump is going to help revive that? Or is he going to – are there going to be a lot of sort of people who are so turned off by his manner or the bombast or the Steve Bannon of it all that they're going to become moderate Democrats? I mean, that to me is a real problem. A real threat. Go ahead.
So point number one is that I agree completely. And to me, the response at universities and high schools across the country to the election was extremely telling. And it was telling because – and you know what I'm talking about. I'm not actually talking about the protests. I'm talking about the safe rooms, the safe spaces, counseling being offered, letters from presidents and provosts saying if you feel threatened, if you feel frightened, go see this counselor or this dean or that dean or the other dean. Frankly, apart from anything else, one thing it has shown is how cosseted these – not the individual students but the institutions themselves. It's just astonishing that they had this huge deanery, this huge bureaucracy across the country. Every school seems to have five deans that do nothing but give tissues right to children and wipe their tears away. The amount of waste is – but set that aside. They felt completely entitled to do this. They did so unselfconsciously. It all sprang up immediately after the election. There was no sense of coordination. This wasn't a political movement. And what that indicates is exactly what you said, that they had become so convinced of their own propriety, of their own rightness or morality, of their own ideological position, and they had so succeeded in cowing good people who might disagree with them on campuses that they had forgotten that other points of view might even exist. So will Trump change that? I can only tell you about a high school here in Northern California that I heard about the other day. I heard about this from through the Parents Network, where the teachers protested and teachers were crying in the classroom and they were encouraging students to write letters and protest. And at one point, the teachers at lunchtime put up posters. In any event, parents pushed back. And the principal felt the need to hold a session. There was a brown bag lunch open to parents, and parents showed up. These parents could not have voted in large numbers for Donald Trump. We're talking about Northern California.
Right.
But the parents had had enough. And the principal just took a step back and another step back and another step back. And I guess what I'm saying is that Donald Trump, we began by saying that certain things are out of the box that belong in a box in the deepest recess of the closet. This anti-Semitism is nonsense. But the notion that people feel free to talk back to this, what I hate using the term elite, but we know what it is, to the people who run our right. universities and to an astonishing extent, yeah. exactly, the thought police, that they feel empowered to talk back to the thought police. That's already happened. And that, to me, I have to say it. I really don't know any other way to put it, Rob. I know we have our disagreements about Trump, and we share deep misgivings about the man's personality, all of that. Mm-hmm. But the notion that within a space of 10 days, he could effect this election, let's put it this way, the American people themselves, the American voters themselves, could effect such a sea change in popular culture that it could place on the defensive yeah. people who have come to feel so completely entitled that they've internalized it, that they felt that it's become unselfconscious. I'll tell you another. You've been working so hard over the last couple of weeks. You haven't had a chance to watch television because you've been making so much of it. But I caught Leslie Stahl for 10 minutes on Charlie Rose the other evening. This is last week. And yeah. she was there to talk about taping the 60 Minutes interview with Donald Trump. And this was a 10 or 12 minute segment. And at two or three times during this interview with Charlie Rose, Leslie said to Charlie, I say this as though I know them. Well, I know Charlie Rose a little bit. In any event, she said, Charlie, you and I know that as members of the mainstream media, we have to work hard to make sure that people are still with us. Charlie, our credibility is under. It was staggering that these two people who sit at the very pinnacle
right.
of this media establishment, you cannot name people who have become more prestigious, led more successful careers, frankly, made more money. Those are two very wealthy people, Leslie Stahl and Charlie Rose, yeah. sitting at that table. And they're thinking, wait a minute, we've lost the people. Right. That Donald Trump, of all people, is inside Leslie Stahl's head is both very weird and very good.
It is. I could not agree with you more. And I was speaking to a friend of mine. I don't know if I agree with this yet. I don't think I do. But it's a compelling point. And he said, maybe the actual presence on the national stage, or maybe the presence on the national stage of actual racists will mean that we don't get to call Abdul, Mitt Romney, John McCain,
yes.
Paul Ryan racists. Maybe if we actually have, we know, okay, those are real racists because they are aligned with the Klan.
Right.
Those are true Nazis because they're actually giving the Nazi salute.
Right.
Now we don't have to say Newt Gingrich is a Nazi and a Klansman because we at least know what one looks like, and that ain't it. And so I'm not sure I agree with that, but it does seem like I'm putting the best possible gloss on this, and I'm trying to suppress my own natural instinctive snobbery about the president-elect and his way of speaking and his way of treating people and his taste and his apartment and all of that and his hair, all of the stuff that I'm – which is really just static. It's not signal. It's noise. And I'm trying to tune that out. I'm looking for the positive pathways, the pathways that we could go from here, from today, that would actually end up being positive. And there are some. There really are some.
I don't want to go on and on about this, but the notion of a sea change, as you know, because you know where I live, you've been here many times, you know half of my friends here in Northern California. I know a lot of people who are investors, Silicon Valley investors. These are not people who voted for Donald Trump by and large. But I've heard versions of this over and over again in the last 10 days that it's as if a spell has been broken. I'm talking purely about economically now. Purely about the point of view of investing money and looking for a profitable return, purely about the startup mm-hmm. culture here, mm-hmm. that in the back of my mind as an investor, I've heard versions of this. In the back of my mind, they say to me, I realize now that I was thinking, how much worse is it going to get over the next 4 years or the next 8 years? That is to say, how much more of a regulatory overhang are they going to try to burden us with? How much more are the agencies in Washington going to come after us? And now the question is, good grief, how much better can it get? There's a reason the Dow broke a new record yesterday.
How soon can we build Kingston XL?
Yes, exactly.
Before I know we want to keep moving here, but I know we're going a little bit long, but that's okay because you know we haven't talked in a while.
Whether this will interest anybody else, I don't know, but I'm having a lovely time. It's been a month since we had a chance to chat.
But let's talk about there's two posts on the member feed that jumped out at me. One is sort of Trump related, one is Ricochet related. So I thought we'd kind of get a nice thing. One is Jamie Lockett asks, conservatives and Republicans rightly excoriated the Clintons for their corrupt relationship and the State Department enjoyed the corrupt relationship State Department enjoyed with the Clinton Foundation during Mrs. Clinton's tenure at Foggy Bottom. Donald Trump himself rightly made a big deal of this during the campaign. He needs to remove himself from the appearance of corruption so that his administration isn't hamstrung by constant accusations of corruption from a hostile media. Should he put his assets in a blind trust?
I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know about a blind trust versus other various other kinds of arrangements, but I agree with Jamie Lockett 100% and then some. In my judgment, it was even a mistake to hold these interviews with prospective cabinet secretaries at the Trump Golf Club out in Bedminster, New Jersey over this past weekend. Everything he does that suggests he's promoting his brand or that he's still attending to his businesses is in my judgment, a mistake. I agree with Jamie completely. Whether it's a blind trust or whether there are other legal arrangements that don't go by that name, it needs to be done. The division between his duties as president and his companies needs to be transparent, well understood, and total, in my opinion. That is not a hard one. No nuance there for
really?
Me.
Really?
Yes.
Because there's sort of for me, I mean, you know, the guy's got a family business. His kids work there. I mean, I really need to educate
myself
better on this. It's not
as if he's selling potato knishes on Fifth Avenue. This is a huge enterprise.
But it's an enterprise inextricably linked with his name and who he is. This is unprecedented. It's not just he owns a company or he makes widgets or he was a partner in a bank. These are things that have his name on it that it almost doesn't – it's almost – unfixable at this point. It is what it is. I mean, you just have to hope that he doesn't extort money from foreigners so that he can get richer. I don't really know. The solution to me, the logic there is that yes, what you're suggesting is incredibly economically and financially onerous, and it will probably be to the detriment of his family fortune. And that's what you do when you love your country and you're going to be president of the United States. So there's an argument for that, but there's something about it, like, I don't know. I mean, the guy is a self-promoter, and there is something about his brand of the presidency that's going to be self-promoting.
So what you're saying is when the country voted for this guy, it voted for the brand.
I think he's correct. I think he's tweeted as much.
Go ahead.
And I think he's got a point. I mean, I wish there were a way to extricate his business from his name, but I'm not sure I know how to do that. I'm not sure I could sit there for 48 hours and come up with a plan and pitch it to him that would actually accomplish what he wants to accomplish without basically driving, removing an enormous amount of value from the businesses that he's built that he has a legitimate right to.
Oh, Rob, you've lived so much of your life in marketing and branding that you feel for the man. This is amazing. Have gone from
thinking
that
Peter?
Donald Trump was a moron to actually feeling for him.
I wanted to be richer. My God, what a disaster. So I don't know. I'm not sure there's a solution here. But there's one other. So we can let's move away from Trump just for a minute, because I know we want to wrap it up. But there was another member post, which I thought was interesting. And it's about Ricochet. Ricochet 2010 and Ricochet 2016 compared, because we were on 6 years, longer than that. Wow. So Wiley writes, I went to the Internet Archive, which is cool, to see how Ricochet has changed. And way back in 2010, when it began, Ricochet had the contributors shown on the left, and I put the 2016 still active contributors on the right for comparison. How has the site changed and evolved for us? A lot of those contributors are still around. I mean, but what would you say there, Peter?
Well, let's see. What is there to say? One thing we've discovered is that the contributors matter less than we expected. And the main action, what you and I both enjoy the most, and I think almost all members enjoy the most, is over in the member feed. So we haven't done it. It's just naturally emerged this way that the contributors have become less important and the members more important with regard to content. And then there's just been a sort of natural shakeout. Some people did a lot of writing originally and then discovered they got busy in other aspects of their lives, discovered that it wasn't, and other people found that they really just loved it and are writing more than we might have expected. I feel as though we found some people we've found some people for whom the medium is a real fit. Paul Ray, for example.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who right. Every time he writes something, it's brilliant and insightful. And Paul wasn't with us at the beginning. So it just seems to – it strikes me as a kind of normal, organic shifting that you'd find – shifting turnover that you'd find in virtually any organization, I think. And yet if I say that, that sounds extremely boring and uninsightful. So Rob, save me.
No, I think that's actually right. I mean, I'm going to go way out on a limb here and say that when we started it, we thought we needed contributors to kind of spark conversations.
Right.
And we needed to have them there to kind of give the site credibility and to like encourage members to join and to join in. And to somebody there was starting a conversation, somebody's name you recognized or whose pedigree you admired. And we thought we needed that, and we didn't need it. And we hung on to it for too long. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we were, whether we knew it or not, we were already part. And you and I had these long conversations about whatever we do, let's not make another editorial page, kind of thing. Let's not have the same old people opining over stuff.
Right.
This is for the members. This is a club for members. And I feel like were we early on the whatever the Trump effect was, I think we were already, we weren't necessarily excoriating the establishment. I mean, in many ways you and I are part of it, but we knew instinctively that there were thousands and thousands of smart, articulate people on the center right who had something really meaningful to say about politics and their life and their views and their principles and their careers and the wisdom they've gained over the years they've been working and being parents and starting out and being caught, whatever it is, all different ages, all different geographic locations. And that was what we wanted the site to be this kind of beehive, melting pot, water cooler for smart, thoughtful, interesting, witty people across the country in the center right, and not be just this famous pundit A said this, and now here are my comments. Because it's hard to do. Technologically, it's hard to do. It's hard to do sort of theoretically and conceptually, but I think we're close to it. And what I like is that I feel like the country is there too, maybe.
I agree in every regard that we held on to the notion of star contributors a little bit too long, because we felt our conviction was – well, was it our – let's put it this way. We didn't necessarily have the courage of our convictions originally. Now we do. It's the members' site.
Right. And as it always should be. And before we wrap it up, I just want to say that we are lucky to have the members we have. If you're listening and you're not a member, we would love to have you. We are almost, maybe even a little past halfway to our goal. It's a very, very important goal for us by the end of the year. Not kidding about that. We really need you to be there for us. If you like what you hear and you like the site and you like what we're trying to do, please join and contribute and pick up an Oren Row. It's going to be very exciting 4 years, so we want to be part of it. We're also happy for our sponsors. And this holiday season, check home security off your to-do list. Protect your home with my friends at Simply Safe Home Security. Now is the perfect time. Simply Safe is having its biggest holiday sale ever. You can take a whopping $200 off Simply Safe's special holiday security package. It's an amazing thing. It's an award-winning alarm system that has everything you need to protect your home, an arsenal of 17 security sensors to secure every door and every window. There's a panic button, a blaring siren, and a wireless connection to authorities and police dispatch so your family, your home, everything in it stays safe around the clock. This kind of alarm system is usually $600. Right now it's $400. It's the biggest deal Simply Safe has ever offered. This is a great, great Christmas gift for relatives. I'm telling you, I'm ordering two of them. There's no long-term contract. There's no installation, no hidden fees. It is the tech solution to home security. Check it out now. Get your $200 off by going to simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com. So that's simply, but instead of a Y, it's an I at the end. Simply, SimpliSafe.com/ricochet to get your $200 off. Got to put ricochet in there. And one more time, that's SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. We thank them for not only a great product, but for being sponsors. Peter, it's Thanksgiving. What are you thankful for?
Well, you know, the United States of America and my kids. How's that?
Wow.
Actually, the reverse order, but still, I'm mentioning them both. Wow. We were watching – one of the kids is home. This came home last night and dug up old movies. And it's just a marvelous thing to think, good Lord, my wife and I, these beings didn't exist until we got married and look at them. And then I have to say that the amazing – to reflect – here's another Jim Mattis story. And I just thought to myself, truly, truly, only in America. As I mentioned earlier, Jim Mattis and I are friends. And so on Monday, I woke up and read the news that he was under consideration for Secretary of Defense. I was working pretty hard this past weekend, so I missed it as it was taking place. So I sent him a note of congratulations. And then Jim called. He'd like me to help him if I can find a young speechwriter. So we talked. And he said, listen, I've got to run. This is Monday. I said, Jim, where are you going? He said, well, I've got jury duty. I've got jury duty down in San Jose. And so the man is under – he 24 hours before, he had been in the presence of the president and vice president-elect of the United States of America who were considering naming him to run the most powerful military force in human history. And he had to run because as a citizen of the United States – he had jury duty.
Fantastic.
God bless America.
You know, God bless. I actually feel like jury duty is one of those things that we should – I feel like we should – everybody makes jokes about trying to get out of it and hated it, trying to get out of it. I feel like we should have the social, you know, approbation on that, a sanction on that. You shouldn't – that's not something that you should be able to get out of. It's not something you should want to get out of. It's not something that should be considered honorable to get out of. You should have to do it. I do it whenever I was called to do it in January. I can't. I just went online this morning, postponed to April when I have to go back to LA to do it. So, I'm not trying to get out of it. I mean,
and you know. Rob,
yes,
what are you thankful for?
Well, money, of course. my one true
your
love,
wonderful new gig.
Yeah, my one true love, money. I am thankful for. I think I would say, this is going to sound incredibly narcissistic and egotistical, but I'm not taking credit for it because I am surprised by it. I am thankful that I was spectacularly wrong and that I'm okay with it. You know what I mean? I'm not sure I know exactly how to articulate how I feel, but spectacularly wrong and that is a good thing. Like, I'm thankful for the drubbing I got. I'm thankful for the humility and the humiliation, the mortification of being so wrong. And I'm thankful for the friends of mine who were on the other side, who have been, you know, gracious in victory, and but also, you know, beat to the fire, which is fine. I'm thankful that the taking aside the specifics of what occurred on election day, I'm thankful that those things can happen, that we don't have it all figured out, that there's no science and no data and no graph and no algorithm that can accurately predict the future. Yes. The future is not knowable.
The best commentary on the election that I saw, and of course, given the business I'm in, I read a lot of it. The best commentary was a tweet from Garry Kasparov, chess grandmaster and Russian dissident. Unpredictable elections. What a luxury you Americans have. Beautiful, right. Isn't it?
I think that's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's exactly right. It's exactly right. So I'm thankful for that. What are you going to eat? Got anything special in the on the table?
I know it is a peculiarity of my wife that she does a dry run on the turkey.
Really?
A week before. So I've been eating turkey for 2 or 3 days already, and tomorrow we get the turkey just right and all the adjustments that get made. She sort of does a shakedown cruise. We're just going to have an old-fashioned traditional Thanksgiving with the little Cuban twist. My wife is Cuban, as you very well know. Yes. That in addition to the turkey and the dressing and the mashed potatoes and the sweet potatoes and the cranberry sauce, there's also going to be frijoles. Oh, what about man. You? What about you? Who are you having Thanksgiving with?
And go down to Maryland to the family, my parents, and we're going to go to my cousins. It's a big family Thanksgiving, and we always have the same. I usually carve because I kind of am persnickety about carving the turkey. Not persnickety, but you know, I like to carve poultry the French way, which is you remove the whole breast from the bird and then you slice it perpendicularly rather than in parallel to the bird, right? So everybody gets –
$25 to any of your cousins who gets that on video and posts it on YouTube. I want to see you carving the turkey à la mode française.
It is the best way. The French, you know, they do know how to do this. This way, everyone – who gets white meat gets a little piece of skin, and the white meat is cut against the grain so it's a little more tender, because as you know, sometimes white meat can be overcooked because the turkey itself is hard to cook. Right. And my cousin does this beautiful job, and there's always great – way, 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 way too much food, and we're all sort of barely awake by 5:15, but it's a lovely – it's a good Thanksgiving.
Wonderful. Happy Thanksgiving.
Peter, happy Thanksgiving. If you're listening to the podcast and you are a member, we thank you. If you are not, please join. I know I've said it 5 times. I haven't been around for 2 weeks, so I got to catch up, but also so do you. Please join. Go to ricochet.com. Join. We're halfway to our goal for the end of the year. We have the big Mo is with us, and we really need to hit that number. So check out the site and join. You know, a month free, so it's not even risk. So after a month, if you don't like it, you can bail, but we know you won't. We are also brought to you by Patriot Mobile, the newest, most interesting way for you to get your cell phone service. Harry Shave, Casper Mattresses, and Simply Safe. Thanks to all of them for their support. Visit the Ricochet store. Lots of great Ricochet swag in there, mugs and whatnot. If you like the show and after you become a member, go to iTunes and leave a review, because that allows new listeners to discover us, and that helps keep the show going. We need you to be one of the core 1,500 we're looking for. So if you're not a member, please join. And of course, the most important thing is join the conversation. We really do love that. Peter, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Next week.
Next week.
I've got plenty to be thankful for. I haven't got a great big yacht to sail from shore to shore. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got plenty to be thankful for. No private car, no caviar, no carpet on my floor. still I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got eyes to see with, ears to hear with, arms to hug with, lips to kiss with, someone to adore. How could anybody ask for more? My needs are small, I buy them all at the 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, I've got plenty to be thankful for. See with, ears to hear with, arms to hug with, lips to kiss with, someone to adore. How could anybody ask for more? My needs are small, buy them all, 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, I've got plenty to be thankful for.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.